KTOO Public Media would like to acknowledge the Tlenadi of the Akkwan. We are on their ancestral homeland. Our broadcast studios are built on fill that was once tideland and part of what is called the Indian Village. We recognize those families who regarded the tidelands as a source of food and part of their home, who maintained the smokehouses on the tidelands, who parked their boats in the harbor, and who gathered driftwood for fuel. The families of the Juneau Indian Village, like their ancestors, cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront. KTOO is working to lift up Tlingit voices through the sharing of stories like these and the broadcast of the Tlingit language. Please excuse us for our mistakes and gunas chish for your patience as we learn. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. The power and beauty of the work of Joy Harjo is being celebrated at the Juneau Douglas City Museum this first Friday. Here to tell us all about it is Beth Weigel, director of the City Museum. Hello, Beth.
Hi.
Hi. It was Joy.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here. So it was Joy Harjo, our U.S. Poet Laureate, who said, quote, "I was born with eyes that never close," and quote, "Remember, you are this universe, and this universe is you." I was just wondering, what can you tell me about her?
Well, I guess I can, we know she's our U.S. Poet Laureate. She's a Muscogee Nation, and her book of poetry that we're celebrating, An American Sunrise, is a bestseller, of course, and also the selection for the NEA Big Read in Juneau, which is a program of the Juneau Public Libraries with partnership, of course, with the City Museum and the University. I think Perseverance Theater is in there too as a partner this year. And so it's exciting because it's a book that we're hoping, it's a book of poetry that we hope everyone will want to come and pick up a free book and really start engaging in reading some of these poems of Indigenous displacement, really is what we're talking about here.
What does it mean for a book to be selected for the NEA National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Program?
Right. Well, the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, collaboration with Arts Midwest, offer this program, the NEA Big Read. They have, I imagine, their own panel of people who decide which books are part of the selection of which books can be chosen for the Big Read. So if you go to their website, you'll find, a lot of all the different books that organizations, when they apply to do an NEA Big Read, can select as their choice. So I know that the Kate Enge, who's applied for the grant from the library this year, she spent some time talking with other people about what to choose. And I know that, it's in conjunction with the One Campus, One Book program out at the university. So Jonas Lamb, the librarian out there who works on that project. So I think it was a local decision to choose the Joy Harjo poems, An American Sunrise, because it does speak so closely to a lot of things that I think we see emerging in our discourse and dialogue about how Indigenous people have been treated over the years and in the past.
Critics have described An American Sunrise as a wisdom quest. What are you hoping people will experience at the City Museum this Friday when they, maybe we should back up a little bit. You can tell me what to expect at the event.
Right. So we're hosting the kickoff, and the reason that we offered to host the kickoff to the NEA Big Read is because we are in the last month, October will be the last month of our exhibit, Echoes of War, Ununga Internment During World War II. So there's, I think, a lot of places where we can connect with the poems, even though it's of a different time and a different place, with the themes of the exhibit. And, even in just the little preface that she writes about, on May 28th, 1830, President Andrew Jackson unlawfully signed the Indian Removal Act to force move Southeastern peoples from their homelands to the West, and then goes on to describe how people were rounded up and other people started moving in with all of their cattle and pressure and printing and all the things that you think of as you settle a place. And you know, she writes, there were many trails of tears of tribal nations all over North America of Indigenous people who were forcibly removed from their homelands by government forces. And that's what the Echoes of War exhibit really tries to bring out in this untold story of World War II. It's the movement of people from the Aleutians and the Pribilof Islands. It was a forced move, supposedly for their protection, which, you know, a lot of these poems address that as well. But also, you know, to a place that was far from where they came from, very different, unfamiliar, frightening, lasted much longer than ever anticipated they would be away from their homes. So it's a lot of just a lot of things connect when you start looking at how Indigenous people have been forced from their homes, whether it's guised in for their protection or it's a little bit more outwardly racially motivated.
And the idea is that there will be readings of Harjo's poetry as folks move through the City Museum and look at the Echoes of War exhibit. So what are you hoping people will experience when they do that?
Yeah, so we're still really conscientious about the fact that we're in COVID times, and that we, although we're having an event, we don't necessarily want to frame it as an event where everybody shows up for a poetry reading like you would traditionally think, and everybody sits still and focuses in one place. So we've tried to create a soundscape of the poetry from the book, and we've asked a variety of people throughout the community to record the poems, and so I think we have about 22 recordings of the different poems in the book, a couple repeats, but we'll have that on in the museum as people move through the exhibit. And also our curator will, you know, kind of pop in and talk about how things connect up a little bit between the poetry and the exhibit. But it's more of a soundscape, right? So we'll have poems being read, and then we might take a break and Nico might jump in on the microphone and talk a little bit about something and how it connects. And we're really excited to have all the different people who have recorded poems for this, who may or may not show up to the museum, we don't know, but we'll have their recordings, and that will be a soundscape. But we're particularly excited that Ernestine Hayes has joined us in a recording. She is, of course, our Marie Darlin Prize winner from the Juno Douglas City Museum, which is a $5,000 cash award for someone whose work has had an impact in our community or our region. And so she's recorded the poem, How to Write a Poem in a Time of War for us, which is in Joy Harjo's book. And I thought I'd just talk about that poem real quickly, because I think it's probably one of the ones that connects us most to the exhibit here at the museum.
Please do. Go ahead.
So this is, again, the title's How to Write a Poem in a Time of War. And, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing because I think you should come and listen to it. But she basically starts off, she's having a dialogue with herself, trying to decide how to start this poem. And she's like, you can't begin just anywhere. It's a wreck. And then the first stanza really gives us a view into what it's like to be in war. You have images of war that include things that are violent and images of displacement. And I like the one line in that first stanza that says, rumors fall like rain, like bombs. And you really, you know, when you go through the Ununga Echoes of War exhibit, people talk about like these things were happening and all around them. And, you know, they were given that short opportunity to pack one bag. And there's another poem in here that talks about that, right? And so then in the second stanza, she's like, no, we can't start there. That's too horrific, right? That's just too hard. So then she starts again and she shows a more nostalgic look at where they came from, talking about the nature and the laughter and pretending that war was not coming in that second stanza. And she's like, no, that's not going to work either. So she tries again. Because she says that memory's just too shredded, you know, it's impossible to hold with words, even with poetry. And so she tries one more time, and again, it's another memory sort of start, and it's really looking at something that really tears at the heart, right? You know, the torn pocket of your daughter's hand-sewn dress, the sash, the lace, the baby's delicate beaded moccasins still connected. And she's like, no, we can't do that like that. This is not the best place to begin. We'll never get through it, right? And so she finally comes into the last stanza, and that's the one I want to read for you because I think it really connects with the exhibit. Someone has to make it out alive, sang a grandfather to his grandson, his granddaughter, as he blew his most powerful song into the hearts of the children. There it would be hidden from the soldiers who would take them miles, rivers, mountains from the naval cord place of the origin story. He knew one day, far day, the grandchildren would return. Generations later, over slick highways, constructed over old trails, through walls of laws meant to hamper or destroy, over stones bearing libraries of the winds, he sang us back to our home place from which we were stolen in these smoky green hills. And she finishes with, yes, this is where we begin. And I think as you experience the exhibit in the City Museum, and as we worked with the people, the Onunga people in the Pribilof Islands, that was a very big part of it, is the coming home, the resilience, the healing of from the trauma, and how for a long time, of course, no one wanted to talk about what had happened and the people that died and were left behind in Funter Bay. But now they recognize that, and the stories are told again, and that has brought forth healing and resilience in the community. And they have a remembrance walk every year. And, you know, it's a story that they want the world to know about, because it's been such a forgotten story of World War II. So I think the poems really help us to dig in a little bit deeper to some of the themes in the exhibit. And then we hope that people will have that experience when they come to the Big Read kickoff on Friday.
Wow. Powerful stuff, Beth. And thank you so much for reading us that and for taking us through that poem. It makes me really excited to read the whole book and to attend the event on Friday. I understand that copies of An American Sunrise will be available at the event for free. So yep. Folks can come and grab a book and then get started on reading it. Also, I think when a book is selected for the Big Read, it's sort of unlimitedly available as an ebook through the library's borrowing program.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
And I often suggest if you can do an audio version of the book, or even if you just have a couple of friends together, or even if you're by yourself, read it out loud to yourself, because that's how I experienced it the first time. And poetry is meant to be heard. So it's, even if it's just your own voice, I think it's a much more powerful experience.
That's a good pro tip. It sounds like you are all pretty big fans of this book over there.
Absolutely.
Well, this is going to be a great opportunity to do more than just read poetry or hear it, but to really take it in. So thank you so much for the overview of the event that's happening this first Friday, starting at 4:30 at the City Museum.
That's right. And I just wanted to also mention that we are shifting our hours because the season of our visitors is ending here in September. So starting on the 30th, we'll be back to 10 to 4, except for, of course, first Friday on the 1st. We'll open at 10 and be open till about 7 with first Friday beginning around 4:30. We will not be having any refreshments because we want to make sure everybody knows you need to keep your mask on. And again, like I said, we haven't created this event for stopping and just really focusing on any one thing for a very long time. So it'll be just an opportunity to visit the museum and experience the soundscape of poems and look through the exhibit one last time maybe and talk with our curator. And then we'll still be open Sunday the 3rd from 10 to 4 and Monday the 4th from 2 to 6. And then on the 5th of October, we're just 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday until the spring. So
great. Well, thanks for taking the time to visit with us today, Beth Weigel, director of the Juno Douglas City Museum. I really appreciate all that you had to share today.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Marches are being organized in every state this Saturday to defend abortion rights. Joining me now is Jenny Brown, the lead organizer of the Juno Rally. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
And Carla Hart, a member of the organizing team. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. Well, thank you both for being here. Let's dive right in. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected an emergency request to block an abortion ban in Texas. How did you both feel when you heard about that? Jenny, we'll start with you.
I felt like that it's not fair, not only to the Texas women, but to women
you know, throughout our land and throughout the state as well. Because I know that once it starts hitting other states, like Texas isn't going to be the first state that has this abortion ban. I think it's called the heartbeat ban or heartbeat law or something. But it was pretty upsetting to hear, because I know that not all pregnancies are pregnancies from consensual sex. And so when it says it doesn't matter how the female got pregnant, it was anything after 6 weeks, they couldn't get an abortion. A lot of the times, people don't realize they're pregnant until maybe after 8 to 10 weeks. You know what I mean? So by the time they find out, they can't even get an abortion if it's not something that they wanted or could actually deal with, that they have to, you know, keep the baby. And not all people are wanting to be pregnant or wanting to get pregnant. And a lot of the times, you know, there's subjects of incest and rape that happen where people end up getting pregnant. And it's not something that they can handle. Like, trauma sets in, and it's just something, I just feel like it's a woman's body. I don't think that men should have any kind of a say against a woman's body and a woman's choice.
Carla, what would you add to that?
I just add that I see this as an unfolding of what started long ago and has happened with the appointments to the Supreme Court that were made, and then this opportunity to further degrade reproductive rights and reproductive justice, and definitely that we need to speak up.
What's important to you about having accessible reproductive health resources for everyone, including abortion? Carla, we'll stay with you.
I think that we really need to respect women, and reproductive rights have been a tool of control rather than really anything relating to human life. It's a means of controlling women's bodies, and that just needs to change.
And Jenny, would you add anything to that?
I would just add on to Carla's too, that I think that as much as everybody likes to preach that humans are equal, you know what I mean? Like, they stand for equal rights for everybody, but they still do things to try to control other people, including women's bodies and women's choices.
The Women's March put out a call for protest nationwide, and Juneau is one of many communities in Alaska that responded. Can one of you tell me a little bit about the Women's March? Who are they and what do they do?
Yeah, I'll let Jenny take that. She's been the leader in it.
The Women's March has gotten together, I believe, as of, I want to say the Trump administration. Yeah. And they are, you know, they band together for a lot of things. It's not just, it's a worldwide protest. I believe it is from Trump. And the fact that most of his statements were against women, basically. So it's like the largest, I think it's the largest protest in the U.S., even, I guess, in the U.S. history, is having the Women's March. And what we're doing with the Women's March is that we just feel like it's extremely important that we stand with the women of Texas, as well as the other states who are working to take away the women's right to choose. And as women in Alaska, we are facing a similar bill that will threaten our constitutional rights, and it's time for us to take a stand and have our voices heard. As a Native woman, it's important that people of color hear our voices and have our voices heard. Just because we don't say things lightly, you know what I mean? We're at grave risk of losing our reproductive freedom completely. So it's not just like it's Texas and Mississippi. It's up to the highest court in our land, and they're refusing to defend our constitutional rights. So what we're witnessing is the most direct and dire threats to our reproductive health in our lifetimes.
Yes, it certainly seems like this has been a long time in the works from pro-choice advocates and politicians. The Juno rally will take place at the Whale Park at noon on Saturday. Jenny, you are the organizer. What do you need from the community?
I would just like support from the community. Like, we have a great list of speakers that are coming to speak. We have legislators, we have Native corporations, tribal members, we have community members. We have city assembly, people running for city assembly, people running for governor. We just want to be heard, and we want to let our legislation know that we're heard. You know what I mean? So it takes part in every aspect of Juno, and that we just want to be equal.
I understand that this is going to be an outdoor event. Obviously, it's taking place at the park outside, and masks will be required. And you just want to remind folks to dress warmly. The weather forecast isn't looking great, but it sounds like you'll have a few masks to share and a few signs as well. What else should folks do to prepare?
We have actually are in the process of making signs today, tomorrow, and Friday, I'm sure, until the day of the rally. We did get PPE equipment donated from Central Council Tlingit Haida. So they're providing us with masks and hand sanitizer and gloves and wipes to wipe things down. Just because we know that we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we're also trying to stay safe. So we have masks available if nobody has masks there. We do have a few other donations too that are happening that are going to be there as well.
Yeah. And we are going to be live streaming the event for people who cannot make it, or who the weather's too extreme, or COVID concerns, or whatever reason. And that live stream will be through our Facebook event page, which is the Juno Rally for Abortion Justice. So if you just search Juno Rally for Abortion Justice on Facebook, and the day of the rally, we will have the Facebook live stream as well to participate.
What do you both hope will come out of this rally?
I hope that we get heard. I hope that we're not the only people in Juno that are going to be, you know, doing our call to action to our legislatures and to our senators and representatives, to our governor. Because not only is Texas doing this heartbeat ban, but they also have been challenging the Indian Child Welfare Act since 2018. So they're trying to take all the Native children out of the Native homes and put them in quote unquote good Christian homes, where they're calling it the silent genocide, basically. So I know that September 30th is the Orange Shirt Day, the Every Child Matters Day. So I thought that I would throw that in there also, that Texas is also doing this.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Tomorrow's show will be focused on Orange Shirt Day as well. Well, once again, the rally is set for noon this Saturday at the Whale Park. I want to thank you both for joining me, Jenny Brown and Carla Hart. I wish we had a little bit more time to talk about this today and talk about all the issues that this rally is in support of. But I really thank you both for doing what you're doing, and I hope you have a great turnout this weekend.
Thank you very much. A reminder that this isn't just a women's rally. Everyone should be concerned about reproductive rights and reproductive justice and human rights. So everyone, please show up. Thank you.
A good note to end on. Thank you, Carla.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of yours.
Maybe you've heard our next guest talk about jazz on public radio, or listened to one of her many albums in which her fingers fly across the keyboard. Now you're about to hear from Judy Carmichael in person via Zoom. When we come back, what she plans to play at her concert tomorrow night in Juno. You may have heard of Judy Carmichael on her nationally syndicated public radio program, Jazz Inspired, in which she talks with celebrity music fans about their creativity. But today we get to find out what has inspired her own music. Welcome to the show, Judy Carmichael. Hello.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for being here. I really appreciate your time. You are a Grammy-nominated jazz pianist and singer and one of the headliners for this week's Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Concert Series. Let's start off with, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you become a musician?
I wasn't planning on a musical career. I was actually a language major and doing some acting. I grew up in Los Angeles, and so I had two different directions I was going to go. And then I got a music job playing some ragtime while I was in college. And one of my fans brought in a tape of Count Basie. And I heard that and went crazy and thought, I want to learn how to do this. And dove into swing music and that kind of early jazz style and just loved it, became passionate about it. So it was a surprise, not something I planned on pursuing. But here I am and I love it.
And now you're one of the world's leading interpreters of stride piano and swing. Your nickname is Stride. You've even authored two books on the subject. So what is stride piano and what draws you to it?
I think what draws me to it is the same thing that draws everybody to it, is that it has such an engaging, rhythmic, inviting. It's exciting. It's like boogie woogie. It makes you want to get up and dance. And stride is speaking of the stride, S-T-R-I-D-E. The striding motion that the left hand makes from the bass end of the keys up to the mid range. So it's a stride motion with your hand. So it's a very pianistically complete style because I'm playing the bass, I'm playing the rhythm, I'm playing the horn parts in my right hand, but it's very happy, joyous music. And it's, for those of you who might not know that term, it's Count Basie, Fats Waller, Earl Hines, Art Tatum. All of them played this, you know, came out of this style.
And what's tricky about playing stride piano? And what sort of makes you a standout in that niche style?
I like that. Nobody ever asks me that. That's a good question. What's tricky about it is that there's so many polyrhythms going on, and it's sort of a nuclear level of rubbing your tummy and patting your head. And so the same way to be able to do those kind of disparate things at the same time that make a person able to play drums is the same kind of thing that makes you able to play stride piano. Because to make that all work and make it fluid and make it swing really is difficult. It's difficult. It's something you have to do a lot. You can't, it's sort of like a ballet dancer trying to do a little bit of tap. They can't. They've got to really work on it to be able to tap dance. It's a very rhythmically specific thing that you have to work on.
Well, Judy Carmichael, you're a very big deal now, but I know that you spent some time performing on the jazz scene, trying to make it in Los Angeles and New York and other places in the 70s and the 80s. What was that like?
Well, it's interesting. Early in your career, I think most musicians would agree with this, you're just trying to get good at it. You know, your main goal, at least that was the goal back then. Now it seems like everybody wants to be famous before they get any skill. They just want to be, you know, get on, have an internet presence and, you know, before they develop anything. And that's not everybody, but some people. And I was, it was tough. There weren't a lot of women instrumentalists around. So I didn't have role models in that way. There were women jazz singers, but when I started, I'm quite proud of this, and it's a surprise to people, but I worked at Disneyland, and I was the first woman instrumentalist ever hired by Disneyland. They had no women instrumentalists when I worked there. Wow. And that was in the 80s. It isn't like we're talking 1930. And so my dressing room was with 10 men because they didn't have a dressing room, a woman's dressing room by the piano where I played. And so some musicians treated me beautifully. A lot treated me horribly. And it's funny because I was just talking to one of my musicians today, how long it took for me to be comfortable with other jazz musicians because they just always assumed I was somebody's girlfriend. If I came to the gig, they wouldn't think, you know, I'd say, I play piano. They're like, yeah, right. Get out of here, Blondie. And so it was hard. There were a lot of things that were hard, but the people, once I played, I was very fortunate because I knew Sarah Vaughan and Carmen McRae and Count Basie and people like that. And who are much older than I, And so in my early 20s, when I met these people and they heard me play, they were all in. They wanted to do everything they could to support me because they knew nobody would take me seriously. They think, well, she walks in and she looks, you know, like an airline stewardess. She's not going to, that's how they looked. That's what people called me. They said, it looks like a flight attendant flew in, you know. And
sorry, they can't see me, but I'm just rolling my eyes over here. How ridiculous.
Yeah, well, of course you are, because it was really how it was. I mean, I remember I met the great Dave Frischberg, and I went over there and I wanted to talk him into piano lessons. And he opened the door and he said, what, did you just walk off a tennis court? I mean, so I was always getting those kind of comments. And so it was hard in certain ways, but I loved the music so much. And I was very, very fortunate that the right people did believe in me and were there for me. So it was very exciting. And I'm just old enough that when I was very young, I got to meet some of the people who invented jazz. Wow. So that I'm the last generation who can say that. To think that I look back on it now, in some ways I appreciate it even more, you know, that I knew these people.
That is pretty cool. Well, you are cracking me up over here, but you're certainly known for incorporating humor into your performances as well, which seems kind of, it was kind of a surprise for me to read that about you. Is that a conscious decision that you made, maybe something to help you stand out, or just a natural part of your personality?
That's another great question that no one ever asked me. And so good on you. It was a conscious decision because, I mean, it happened, I'd been pursuing some comedic acting, so comedy was something that was natural to me and being on stage. But it's another skill. It's a separate skill from developing music, to be able to speak well on stage and to be entertaining. And one time I did a concert and it was sort of an accident. Something bizarre happened, so I made a joke out of it and the audience laughed and it made me relax. And I was a discovery. I thought, well, if I can do that and I'm relaxed, the audience is relaxed too. So that developed into also, I was playing this kind of music that hadn't even been thought about in 30 years when I started doing it. And I thought, this is what I want to do. If I can frame it in a way that invites everybody in, I know the music's great. And even though they've never heard of it, maybe, if I do this, it'll get the audience there and they'll be introduced to it and maybe they'll be open to it. And I've been proven right because I've been able to get a much broader audience than your typical jazz audience.
So singer, pianist, author, comic, and radio show host. So that's something I can actually relate to. Tell me about Jazz Inspired.
Well, that's a labor of love for me. And again, it relates back to my surrounding in my performances with some comedy that most people, I mean, I hate to say it because I love jazz so much, but a lot of people think they hate jazz. They hear one thing and they get scared. And I mean, I have people constantly say they hate jazz, but they love me after a concert. But every musician I know tells me stories like that. So I thought, I knew all these people like Billy Joel and Jeff Goldblum, different people that I'd met in my career that I knew loved jazz. And I thought if I could get them on a show talking about why they love jazz, people would tune in because it's Billy Joel. And they'd think, oh, Billy Joel loves jazz. And he's also very articulate about it. And he talks about how it influenced his music, that maybe people would give jazz a chance. And I thought that way people who are jazz fans already will listen to the show and hopefully learn something and listen more deeply. And then people who maybe wouldn't normally give jazz a chance would listen. And it's been fantastic for me. And since the show is about inspiration, I'm having all these tremendously talented people I admire because I'm the producer. So I'm the one booking the guests. So it's it's basically with people I don't know, it's a blind date with somebody I want to spend an hour with and I get to do it. So yeah, it's been great. And I'm in my 21st year. I'm quite proud. 2022 will be 22 years, which is really something to have a show on NPR and especially to be an independent producer.
Well, now I'm grinning over here because I feel so inspired too as a host myself.
I'm so pleased. Great.
So after 22 years, I'm sure you have a lot of stories. Is there a memorable moment you'd want to share?
So there's hugely memorable moments. I mean, I said Billy Joel, I'll tell you, that's a great one, because he and I met and we somehow got talking about lunch, and that we both like long European lunches. And we're both Steinway artists, so we had a lot of connections. We knew people in common. We lived near each other. And he said, well, he'd do the interview, but only if we did it over lunch. So we did it in this little restaurant in the Hamptons with ladies who lunch, all sitting around, and then the two of us in jeans. So, you know, nobody paid any attention to us. Nobody cared. And we started kind of like an awkward blind date. And 3 hours and three bottles of wine later, we were two kind of drunk musicians hanging out. And this was early in the show, and I recorded for 3 hours. And I thought, there's no way I can do this every time. I don't have the time to edit. I don't have the time to be with people. I mean, it's fantastic, fantastic, and funny and wonderful. And I had a ball, but it was, and he was so gracious. And I can tell you, as a fellow radio girl, that I had my, back then it was a DAT recorder, and I had the machine on, and I was so nervous, I couldn't get it to turn on. And I said, I don't know what's wrong. I'm trying to do it. And he says, I think if you push this button, it says power, it will work. So that was one of my first, and here I was already blowing it because I didn't know how to get the recorder going. So he was quite gracious. So I felt okay.
Oh, that's how you learn. That's how you learn.
Yes.
Judy Carmichael, I have so enjoyed this conversation. I'd love to talk to you more, but we haven't even touched on the most exciting part, the reason you're here. You're performing in Juneau tomorrow night. And I think and tickets are still available. At least they were last time I checked. I'm sure they're going fast. Go to Juneau Jazz and Classics website. 7:30 p.m. at the Jack. What can audiences expect if they attend?
Oh, an evening of fun. I have two fantastic musicians with me. I'm very excited about this. And we're really excited because we haven't been playing that much, of course, because of COVID. So the fact that we could do this and we have a new audience, because we're excited to be here in Alaska, and especially in Juneau, it's such a cool town. Yeah. I love it here. And so it'll be swing music. We'll play standards from the Great American Songbook. I always say my music's sort of Fats Waller meets Peggy Lee. So I'll do a lot of some of her compositions and the standards, people, a lot of Gershwin, a lot of Cole Porter, and as I said, some Count Basie, Fats Waller, Benny Goodman, that kind of thing. I have Dan Block, who plays clarinet and saxophone with me, and James Turillo, who will be playing guitar, and we're excited. We hope everybody will come out and take advantage that we get to be together.
Absolutely. And I do encourage everyone to visit the website and review the COVID-19 policies for the performance. I believe masks and proof of vaccination are required. Again, yes. Judy Carmichael, I could chat with you all day. Thanks for being a guest on our show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great concert.
Thank you.
This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. This week, the Juneau Public Library System is taking some time to celebrate the freedom to read as part of National Banned Book Week. Here now are Kate Inge, Grants and Marketing Coordinator for Juneau Public Libraries. Hi, Kate.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. Good to talk with you. And Felicity Tone, Outreach Coordinator. Hi, Felicity.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I'm excited to talk about National Banned Book Week. And how the library is observing it. But first, what is a banned book and how is it defined or made official or put on the list?
Well, a banned book is any book that's been removed from the collection of either a library or a school library. So they start off with being challenged. A book might be challenged by a teacher, a student, a parent, or a group. And if the library or school system decides to remove the challenge book, then it becomes banned and you won't have access to it in that school or library.
Got it. Any examples of famed banned books that are now considered mainstream or classics or even now very commonly assigned reading?
Yeah, a lot of classics have been challenged or banned throughout the years. Great Gatsby, Lord of the Flies, Beloved, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Beloved.
And
I didn't know that.
Our current ones too, Harry Potter, George by Alex Gino, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which actually is a book that came out a couple years ago. And that's when I read it and I really enjoyed that one. So So they go from classics to more contemporary works.
Interesting, because I was going to ask, is there like a list of banned books today or any such thing as banned books? And sounds like absolutely, it's still a thing.
It's still a thing. The American Library Association is kind of the one who's spearheads Banned Book Week, and it provides a lot of materials. And they will give, they will have the data and statistics of banned and challenged books. And they also are the ones who manage the list. So every year they'll have, like, they'll have a running list, and then every year they'll have, like, here's the most challenged or banned books for, like, 2020 or 2019.
So tell me what the library is doing for National Banned Book Week. You are not banning books. You are celebrating these books.
No. Yes, we celebrate everybody's right to pick and choose what they want to read. And we have right now displays at, I think, all three public library branches, Valley, Douglas, and downtown. And I think we're just showcasing what books are banned, and it's a wider range than I think some people realize. So they might think, oh, I remember Grapes of Wrath was, you know, banned, or there was an issue with that when I was growing up. And then they'll see, like, oh, it's not just these classics. It's more contemporary ones. It's kid books. It's adult books. There's a wide variety.
And with the book we have on display, we'll usually have something that says why this book was banned or why it was challenged. And a lot of folks are kind of surprised when they see certain books there. So they look and see why it was banned or challenged, and they're really, really surprised. And it's just whenever books are banned and challenged, these are sometimes books that we're all pretty familiar with.
Do you have an example of one that's a surprise that's banned, so people that are frequently surprised by?
There are some kids' books that I think really catch people off guard. Let's see. I know Harry Potter isn't one that surprises people, but some people have been surprised by it, just because it's one that we've all grown up and really loved. There's some picture books. There's one titled And Tango Makes Three, and that one gets challenged quite a bit. It usually makes the top 10 list. It did not make the top 10 list for last year, but it's a popular book. And whenever people see it, it's about penguins. They're like, why is this banned or challenged? So.
Well, what's your favorite banned book or one you're looking forward to reading as part of Banned Book Week?
I was reading The Great Gatsby. So I think it's one, I think I read it in school. And so I grabbed it. We had a copy downtown. And so I've been kind of refamiliarizing myself with the story. And that's the one I decided to read this year.
How about you,
and
Felicity?
I like Speak by Laurie Halse Anderson. There's a novel form of it. There's also a graphic novel version. And then there's a memoir by the author herself that is pretty much the basis of the book is what her memoir is about as well. And it's really well done. So there's like three different versions of this same story, and it's really, really great.
That's a good example. I've read that one too. Well, thank you so much, Kate and Felicity. We don't have any more time today to talk about that, but I do appreciate checking in with the library and hearing about banned books and Banned Book Week. And thank you for bringing those to the forefront. So we can find out more on your website, and we will talk with you guys again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a great afternoon.
Bye.